This is Jeff Blankford. My guest today, Joe Lordia, is a friend, veteran foreign affairs journalist. He has written for the Boston Globe, the Sunday Times of London, the Wall Street Journal, among other newspapers. Most recently, his writings can be found at Consortium News. He is the author of How I Lost by Hillary Clinton, published by OR Books in June, and he can be reached at joelordia@gmail.com. We spoke last December, a year ago, on the same subject, close to an anti-Russian warmonger, in which he only has only intensified since then. Welcome, Joe Lordia, Takes on the World.
How are you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing fine. I'm glad to reach you. A year ago, we spoke about the warmongering campaign against Russia that was precipitated by the U.S.-backed coup in Ukraine. And now, judging from your long and disturbing article, the desire to get Trump out of office by any means necessary seems to have driven the liberals to include shutting down the First Amendment and the media. Tell us what's been going on. It's very disturbing when you find the Fairness and Accuracy in Media and the American Civil Liberties Union is barking up the wrong tree.
Yeah, I'm afraid that the people at that organization and across academia and journalism are a subject to a fear that's spreading across the United States, not unlike, unfortunately, the McCarthyism of the 50s. It's been compared to that, and I think aptly. It's a fear about opposing this narrative about Trump's collusion, alleged collusion with Russia, and Russia's threat to the United States, their interference in the election, to express skepticism about that. Not denial of that, but just skepticism about that, because the evidence has not come forward to really confirm that. Has caused people, I believe, to get along with the dominant narrative here and to be afraid to criticize that. And this is something I experienced firsthand when I wrote a piece about Russiagate that took into account that right after we learned that Hillary Clinton's campaign, as well as the Democratic National Committee, had paid for the dossier from Christopher Steele, the former MI6 British agent, which was a piece of opposition research, not an intelligence document. Totally different. It was not vetted by himself. It was not vetted by his agency. It was not vetted by other agencies. It was a piece of opposition research, negative stuff to throw against an opponent. I concluded that that was the basis of the January 6th, good part of the basis, the January 6th so-called intelligence assessment by the FBI, the CIA, and the NSA. That is the basis for the belief in the Russiagate story. It's a big part of it. And this was not vetted by all 17 intelligence agencies. It was not a national intelligence estimate. It was no dissenting opinion. It was handpicked analysts by James Clapper from those three agencies. He could pick people who he knew would give him what he wanted in terms of blaming Russia for this catastrophe of Donald Trump being elected. But I think that the Russiagate story fits into a much older story, a strategy to oppose Russia since Yeltsin is gone, basically, and since Medvedev is gone. Putin has stood up to the United States and not allowed Americans to run roughshod over the country as they did in the 1990s when they had Yeltsin as their puppet, really, when Wall Street came in and had alliances with local oligarchs and acid stripped the country and impoverished the people. And Putin has restored sovereignty to the country. And this is something that American leadership cannot tolerate. So the story of Russiagate fits into that, in my opinion. And it also has increased the geopolitical tension between nuclear armed U.S. and Russia enormously. So my article said that the Steele dossier and the CrowdStrike examination of the DNC computers, a private company that was hired by the DNC after they did not allow the FBI to examine their server to see who may have hacked them for the emails that WikiLeaks eventually published. And the CrowdStrike company was run by an anti-Putin Russian. It took one day to determine that Russia had did it, and the clues they gave were that the first name of the Soviet intelligence chief was seen in the metadata, and there were Cyrillic letters. And this is very amateurish clues for a sophisticated operation that CrowdStrike said that it was. And we later learned from Voice of America in March of last year that CrowdStrike, the same software it used to blame Russia for the DNC hack, had also blamed Russia for hacking into howitzers of the Ukrainian army on the battlefield in eastern Ukraine, and that turned out to be false. that Russia had not hacked that, and that was denied by the Ukrainian army, not by Russia. And they had to rewrite CrowdStrike did the next day, that very software, on March 24th. So both of them are very shaky foundations. And that article I wrote, including the geopolitical tensions that Russiagate story has caused, as well as this new McCarthyism, which I'd like to talk to a little bit more later if you can, was an article I wrote for Consortium News at the end of October. I then published it myself at the Huffington Post as a longtime contributor since February of 2006. I can contribute directly onto the site. Within 24 hours, that article was taken down. There was no explanation at all given to me before or after. They ignored my inquiries. I can only conclude it was for political and editorial reasons. It did not fit the Russiagate narrative that a Democratic Party-leaning website like the HuffPost is not the Huffington Post anymore. It's under new management, and Lydia Polgren, a former New York Times reporter and editor, and it's taken a very different turn from the old Huffington Post. I can only conclude they censored this article. I don't like to use that word. I think it's overused. I put a petition up on change.org. It's gotten over 2,000 signatures. Max Blumenthal, Tariq Ali, people of this type, Ray McGovern, have all supported me on this. Ray McGovern put it on his blog, and that really took off in terms of getting attention to this act. We could only call censorship, and that's what the ACLU and FAIR, their leaders, I learned, were rejected supporting me because they personally believed in the Russiagate story. But the whole point of those organizations are not about whether they agree with me or not, and whether I have the right to write such an article like that. Should it be taken down for political reasons? And in one of the petition signers wrote that she did not agree with my article about Russiagate, that she does believe it, but she signed it because she believed I had the right to publish such an article. And this is the whole point about being against censorship. So that was very disappointing about ACLU, which also refused to support Russia Today or RT reporters when they were forced to register as foreign agents. But that's something else we could talk about a bit later if you'd like.
Well, actually, the RT situation is quite extraordinary as well. If any of you listeners have gone on your computer to watch RT, you will find that it is anything but a propaganda outfit, any more than any news broadcast you will see in the United States, except they will have more content and less entertainment and fluff. And many of the hosts have been our Americans, journalists with journalistic experience, like Larry King, Peter Lavelle, and so on. Excellent economic program. I have to say, I've been a guest on RT myself, and the idea that RT has to register as a foreign agent for Russia is extraordinary. But it goes to an example of the extent of the insanity that this Russiagate has produced. Your article being censored and not being defended,
yes,
by the ACLU is extraordinary, given their history of defending Nazis,
yes,
marching in Skokie, for example.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly, which was a principled stand. In the subsequent article I wrote that you read and that you have asked me to speak about on this interview is about how it starts with this explanation, what happened to me at the HuffPost, but I broaden it out into the larger landscape of this growing censorship in the U.S. and in Europe. And I focus in on the class nature of censorship. It's an elite. It's really as old as civilization and a powerful elite that needs to control information that the population has so that it's hidden from them, from the people, how exactly elites are benefiting at the expense of everyone else and not to give dangerous information so they might rebel. And what we've seen now is something has changed because articles, about, especially on foreign policy, have been suppressed. News has been suppressed in American corporate newspapers for decades. But we've seen an elite concentration of ownership of media in the last couple of decades and recently. But now we've seen also dissident websites on the Internet, and RT in particular, are the places where this suppressed news and corporate media, and I have some personal experiences with big newspapers that work where articles were absolutely rejected because they would undermine American foreign policy, even though they were true. These stories can come out and seep out now onto these listening websites like Consortium News, Counterpunch, so many of them, and on RT. So their plan to suppress in their own owned corporate media is troubled, by also by the fact that we've learned in the 2016 election that there's a huge number of Americans who are fed up with 30 years of neoliberal policies, and bipartisan elite sees this on the left and the right, the Bernie Sanders insurgency and Trump's victory has alarmed them. So they have to double down to try to stop this information from seeping out in other places that they don't control, and that would be these websites and RT. So we've seen a whole series of actions, particularly accelerating in the last month or so, against RT and against websites. And the way the government can do this legally is by having private sector do it for them, because the First Amendment does not apply to the private sector. It's government, Congress in particular, as the Constitution said, that cannot make a law to suppress the freedom of the press. So how do they do this? They go to private companies like Google, which have announced now that they have their de-ranking RT articles. Eric Schmidt said he doesn't believe in censorship cynically, but he's actually going to de-rank, make it much harder to find articles from RT. They're hiring 10,000 more censors or people to go through YouTube videos to remove videos that does not fit into the dominant narrative that the elite wants. And we have Facebook also alerting their users if they've seen some of these ads. These ads are $100,000 worth of ads, half of them coming after the election. It supposedly turned this to Hillary Clinton. It's too silly to even comment about. We have some things that government can do. For example, I bring up in my article that during the Second World War, there was direct censorship that was never challenged of the press during the war. And during the Korean War, MacArthur asked for self-censorship of the media, and he got that until about July of 1950, when suddenly the press started writing articles critical of the command, because Americans were battlefield bosses, and then the government said that those articles had to stop. So direct censorship was again applied. But they go to the private sector first to see if they will cooperate. So that's what I think they're doing with Google and with Facebook. Now, what the government can do directly and what they have was want to make RT register as a foreign agent. And this is quite troubling because a week ago Tuesday, the State Department spokeswoman said that would not affect how RT collects or distributes their news. The next day on Wednesday, the day after she said that, the Congressional Press Gallery pulled the RT press passes from their correspondents because they had not registered as a foreign agent. So, there's complete contradiction there. We've got NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, the most powerful military alliance in history, did a huge study on a small website in Canada called Global Research. The Globe and Mail then in Toronto did a huge hit piece on them. Why? Because they are sharing a lot of articles, mostly just a clearinghouse for a lot of dissident articles. Many of consortium news articles are republished there. A handful of mine have been republished there. But NATO and the Globe and Mail present this as a danger to the free world because of global research. La Repubblica in Italy did the same attack on a website called Antidiplomatico, another dissident website. And in addition to that, we are seeing direct McCarthyist attacks on individuals. The Washington Post a week or so ago did a hit piece on Alex Ovechkin, a professional hockey player, a Russian, playing in the United States in Washington area on the Washington Capitals. This Washington Post piece was just a smear against this individual because why? He, like 86% of other Russians, supports his president. And he started a website about that. They've implied that he was just a dupe. Why should he be supporting Putin? We saw John Kiriakou, the CIA whistleblower who blew the whistle on torture, get kicked off a panel in Europe because he hosts a show on Radio Sputnik, and the person who had him kicked off was a Bernie Sanders supporter. And then last week at the Swiss Press Club in Geneva, Beely, I'm forgetting her first name.
Vanessa.
Vanessa Beely was presenting information about the White Helmets, this rescue organization in rebel areas in Syria, which she has evidence of. She wanted to present that they had ties to Al-Qaeda. And the Reporters Without Borders put that in the same category as ACLU and FAIR. They made a huge pressure on the Swiss Press Club to kick her off that panel, and the Swiss Press Club president stood against them and let her speak. And then a week later, 100,000 francs was cut out of their budget from the Swiss government, and he leaves because of that. So these are just some examples of what we're seeing in an elite that feels under pressure in Europe and in the United States from a disgruntled population because these policies are transferring huge amount of wealth from the people to the 1% over the last 30 years. There are foreign wars that have no meaning for anybody, any American working or European working class. They're fed up with that, and they have now information they can get from RT and from dissident websites, and it doesn't have anywhere near the spread, of course, that corporate media does, but they want to stop it. And they're using these tactics, and this is extremely troubling to anyone who cares about a free press and a real marketplace of ideas.
Well, that January intelligence report, one-third of it was devoted to attacking RT about information that was it had nothing to do with the elections. It was they see this very small channel in terms of reach to the United States as a major threat. One can imagine what would have happened had Hillary Clinton actually won the election, because she was the one who ran the most overtly warlike campaign of any Democrat in my lifetime. Lyndon Johnson pretended to be a peace lover. He wasn't. But Hillary Clinton ran a campaign saying she would stand up to Putin. And so it's the people who supported her and the liberal intelligentsia and the Democratic Party are continuing what she promised. No?
Yes, and that's the subject of the book that you mentioned that I wrote, or books, How I Lost Hillary Clinton. We got the WikiLeaks emails that were published, both from DNC and Podesta. I wrote the introduction and annotated it, and Julian Assange wrote the foreword. And my thrust of that was Hillary Clinton was a war hawk, of course, and an economic elitist. We don't know for sure how she would have acted in this first year, but we could tell you this, that she still wanted a no-fly zone in Syria, even after General Joseph Dunford testified to Congress, to a joint session, that he was worried about this because it could mean war with Russia, a no-fly zone. And he testified about that in open hearing, and she went on the last debate and still called for this. So she was bellicose, there's no question about that. She wanted intervention directly in Syria. We know from one of the stories that I had suppressed that I tried to get published, this Defense Intelligence Agency document of August 2012 that warned of the coming Islamic State. That's 2 years before the Islamic State was formed, that the U.S. was supporting the establishment of a Salafist principality in eastern Syria along with Turkey and the Gulf Arabs to put pressure on Assad. And then if you fast forward to September 2016, you have a leaked conversation with John Kerry when he was Secretary of State. He was saying, I mean, he knows why Russia intervened, because Daesh was marching towards Damascus. And we saw them moving towards Damascus, and we watched them, he said, and we wanted them to get Assad to leave, but Russia came in and saved him. So he was admitting there that the U.S. never really fought ISIS inside Syria. They did in Iraq. It's a totally different war, but not in Syria, and that they were using ISIS, just like that document had said, in order to put pressure on Assad to get out. And that was never published in a corporate newspaper that I'm aware of, because I could not twice have it rejected by a big newspaper in the United States. That's just one small example, along with the Ukraine coup d'etat and what happened in Libya, the British parliamentary report that said there was no imminent danger of any kind of massacre or genocide in Libya, and that was suppressed by the Western media. So there's so many examples. Those stories get out on Russian media. They have to be stopped. Hillary Clinton was the architect of that Libya war. My book clearly shows from the emails from WikiLeaks show that that's the case. I'm not here to celebrate Donald Trump at all. I'm horrified by so many things about him. This tax bill I just read has now been finalized between the House and the Senate. It's a horrendous bill that crushes people that voted, a lot of people that voted for him, working class people, who are fed up and thought he was going to be different. And he's totally stabbed them in the back, which I think will make trouble for the elites even more. People are going to be even angrier next time because of that. So I'm not a Trump supporter. I reject both parties. I don't think either one supports the vast majority of Americans' interests. I just want to make that clear.
My guest is Joe Lauria. We're talking about his article, How Russiagate Rationalizes Censorship, Consortium News, and much more, as you've heard. It's just extraordinary things you have to say. We see recently what's happened in Honduras, the overthrow of an election, and we have Hillary Clinton very much involved in the coup back in 2009 against Zelaya, President Zelaya, in Honduras, in which she then said no way should he be allowed to come back to power in Honduras. And the United States was the only government in the Americas that didn't condemn the coup in Honduras. The United States said, well, it's not really a coup. And she defended this coup as being carried out along the laws of Honduras, as if she knew anything about them. So we had a pretty horrible choice in 2016. And either way, we'd be on the threshold of war. Now we might be on the threshold of war with North Korea or even Iran. With Hillary, it would have been Russia, certainly.
Well, we don't know if they would have come to war, but she would have continued an aggressive stance and a dangerous one towards Russia, where an accident could happen, where things could have gone off the rails. And the only thing that Trump's ever said that's halfway decent is he wants to get caught with Russia, and that a lot of people believe is behind intelligence agencies who leaked all this information after he was elected while they're in the transition to try to undermine him. And that is, again, behind the whole Russiagate story, that they want to stop him from having better relations with Russia. Now, the intelligence agencies, since their inception, particularly the CIA, has been very close to Wall Street. It's peopled by people from Wall Street. Its role has been to support the elite and their interests at home and around the world. And these are the people that Democrats and supposedly left-wing or progressive liberals are supporting and worshiping almost as the people who are bringing the truth about what happened, how Russia got Trump to be elected. They can't face what a horrible candidate Clinton was and how Trump was a very, very savvy liar, basically. He manipulated people into believing he was going to help them, people who were suffering enormously. He exploited their suffering, and he cynically manipulated them. And I think that's one reason he won. And now he's turning their back on them, as we see from this health bill that he tried to push and now this tax bill. So, yes, it was a horrible choice for both. And one of the things, by the way, that intelligence assessment had was that they decried that the RT had held a candidate's debate of the third parties, of the Libertarian Party, of the Green Party. I don't know if there are other people there. I didn't see it. But this was presented by the January 6th assessment as undermining democracy in America to present a debate of the third-party candidates. This is the thinking, to actually bring more democracy to Americans through a Russian media was considered to be undermining American democracy. And this is what Facebook says. They want to stop Russia from undermining democracy. And Eric Schmidt of Google said that Russia is using this as a weapon, their information. Yeah, a weapon against the elites in America. This is why they're trying to stop this. They don't, and they've got their careerist journalists in the corporate media who go along with this because they have a stake in the system, and they're only caring about their status and their job, and they are self-censoring, or they don't know about this information at all. They don't care about it, and they see it when it comes from Russia as being, or a dissident website, as being propaganda. And it's unfortunately very successful right now, this campaign, to smear anybody who doesn't go along with the dominant narrative as being somehow a dupe or useful idiot of the Russians, rather than an independent thinking person, like I'm sure a lot of your listeners are, Jeff.
Well, Joe Loria, one of the most extraordinary accusations made against the Russians was that Putin was trying to undermine America's faith in democracy. I don't know a single person who had any faith in our system, as if it would take Putin to do that. This after the 2000 election, most Americans, most people I know, irrespective of their political position, have no faith in the American system, American democracy. It's lost a long time ago, and the idea of the Russians going to come along and undermine it is by leaking some emails. And it's interesting also the fact that it's like a bait and switch situation. None of the hearings so far have produced anything to show there was a collusion between Russia, between Putin and any of the Trump supporters before the election. Russia, it seems to me, that Putin and his friends were doing business with Russian businessmen. And suddenly had political overtones, but they would hire a British disc jockey to arrange a meeting in New York between Donald Trump Jr. and a Russian lawyer, is preposterous. I mean, yes, go on.
They never delivered the opposition research. Supposedly he was going there for opposition research on Clinton. It was never delivered as far as we know. And it's never been established that that's illegal to get opposition research from a foreign source. It has been theorized that that is something of value and that that therefore equals a contribution in money from a foreign government, which is illegal, but that's never been established by a court or anyone. And if it is illegal, there's only one campaign in the 2016 election that did get opposition research from foreigners that we know of. That's the Hillary Clinton campaign from Christopher Steele's rich and from his Russian sources that they paid for. So to accuse Don Jr. of something that he didn't even get, or George Papadopoulos, the low-level campaign guy of Trump who was indicted, who was promised sent emails about Clinton and never got them, apparently, because the indictment doesn't say that, and we never saw them, to accuse these guys. Now, Manafort then was then indicted for crimes he'd committed long before Trump even declared to be president. But that is spun in a way that still somehow proves this whole narrative of Russia's interference. Now, I don't doubt that there'll be more financial indictments by Mueller. It could even reach Trump himself. And maybe they'll get rid of him on that. But the idea that Russia was the one that put him in the office as some kind of Manchurian candidate is just very dangerous. And I think it goes on to these deeper political, geopolitical interests that I'm saying, and to try to squelch, to crush any dissident views inside the U.S. That's the real aim there by the intelligence agencies, apart from Trump, who may have been involved in a lot of shady stuff with the Russians and may have done things. I think that's why he's nervous about Mueller. And Mueller's going after the financial stuff. And then we've seen, Jeff, just in the last couple of days, an enormous amount of mistakes by the corporate media on this. And they just keep going on and on and on. CNN got the date wrong of the email from WikiLeaks to Don Jr. They said it was before the release of the emails, and they gave him a secret code to get them. And it was actually the day after. And we never hear any explanation how that could have been possible, that two sources at CNN and then two at CBS and two at MSNBC, if they were all different sources than these two, all got this date wrong on an email. We saw Bloomberg and the Wall Street Journal getting a story wrong that Mueller wanted banking records of the Trump family from Deutsche Bank. That's not true. We saw Brian Ross get suspended now for a week because he said that Trump had told Flynn to talk to the Russians during the campaign when it was actually after the campaign. If you remember, Jeff, from All the President's Men, that scene where Woodward and Burstyn get a story wrong and Ben Bradley screams at them because he said you shoot too high in an investigation like this and you miss, everyone you're targeting starts to relax. We've seen a slew of mistakes. Now, Woodward and Burstyn didn't make any more after that. But here it doesn't seem to matter. They keep making mistakes because they are a victim of their own mania that they've created about this. So somebody met a Russian. You're guilty. You know, somebody, the moment anything's to do with any kind of Russian contact with someone in the is somehow the crime itself. There's no criminality here except perhaps financial crimes. That doesn't seem to matter. It has gone off the charts, this kind of hysteria that we're going through. And it's influencing people, like at the ACLU, in my opinion, at FAIR and ACLU and in academia. People are scared to talk. People are scared to oppose this story, to have no guts. It is chilling, very chilling.
Joe, you mentioned the mistakes. The mainstream hears the lies, and when they make the errors, it's buried. And on Saturday's New York Times business section, it's buried in the business section. Is a headline says CNN corrects Trump story, fueling fake news claims. And they made so many errors on this, but the public doesn't hear the retractions. They remember
right.
The main story. And so
that's right.
You don't hear that NPR, Democracy Now!, you don't hear them because the retractions are like, they're small print. But these were major errors. It the level of U.S. American journalism today is really at the bottom. This is sloppy reporting, and particularly on a story such as this, they have to be meticulous, but obviously they don't care or they're incompetent.
I think it's a whole bunch of stuff. I think that they care about getting this story out fast because this makes careers. This is the herd mentality writ large, and we could see exactly what drives corporate media here. And when they're latched onto a story like this, you know, they've lost focus, they've lost perspective on what they're doing, and every little bit of information they think that could prove this either is completely wrong or is irrelevant. Look at the Flynn meeting. We heard for weeks this was going to be it, and that just proved collusion. Even after we found out that Flynn had asked the Russian ambassador to not impose retaliatory sanctions harshly on the United States, he did not go to him and say, okay, we're going to lift the sanctions because of something you gave us, because how you helped us to win. That's the allegation. There was never anything in that at all. And if the Trump administration wanted to lift the sanctions, that was their right as the incoming administration as a policy. We heard about how during the Republican convention that somehow Manafort and others were influenced by Russia, either some money was paid, never been explained, to change the platform, the Republican platform, that they wouldn't arm the Ukrainian government. That was Barack Obama's policy. There's nothing new about that. The right policy, too, by the way. So any whiff of some kind of contact between Russia and someone associated with Trump is whipped up into this frenzy of guilt. And we've got millions of Americans believing this, from foaming at the mouth new cold warriors like Rachel Maddow, for example, and a host of other journalists who have lost any sense of perspective or journalistic integrity or standards here in this particular story, because it makes their careers, it makes Maddow a huge amount of ratings. It's about ratings, about career, about being close to power. That's what corporate journalists like, to live vicariously through powerful people. So they're going to bring down a president that they think is the root of all evil in America, where he's a symptom of what's been evil in America for a long time. I don't know where this is going to end, but it looks to me, Jeff, that this is crumbling, this story. But that the Russian connection to overturn the election is becoming less and less the focus and more the financial crimes. But you know what? They'll just forget about that. And frankly, I hope that the Russia part gets out of that, unless there's real evidence, and I will believe it. I'm a skeptic, as I said, not a denier of this story. So if it comes out, but it's been a year and a half, and we haven't seen anything like this. We've just seen all kinds of maniacal false connections being made on things that are not illegal and that are meaningless in the end, because there was some meaning somewhere. I just think that this story is collapsing. I don't know how you feel about that.
Well, they're milking it for all they can, is all it's worth. But, you know, very quickly, I remember, because I did a program on it here, part of it, is Michael Flynn, one of his crimes was he was at head of the DIA, Defense Intelligence Agency, when that report was issued warning about the rise of the Islamic State. And he went on an interview at Al Jazeera and talked about it and the role of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama's administration in building the Islamic State. And I think that hasn't come up at all. But I remember this, and I was surprised that it hasn't. But obviously it's known. And I quoted from his interview on my program here. But there is so much out there that is been twisted and torn and compressed into a scenario that has people waiting. People I know, friends of mine, are waiting for Mueller. They're supporting Mueller. People who always question the U.S. government and its honesty and intelligence agencies, which have lied to us historically, are now believing the intelligence agencies suddenly. Everything is upside down since Trump's got elected. You know, day is night, night is day. And people who ordinarily would take progressive stands and defend people who are been censored and would support free speech are now the ones shutting it down. And that's
absolutely right.
That's extraordinary.
That's what Flynn said. He said it was a willful decision in Washington to support these radicals in Syria as a way to overthrow Assad. And he called that out. Now, I had a lot of problems with Flynn's Islamophobia and his obsession with Iran and his dangerous ideas about Iran. But he was right on that score. There's no question about that. And I also think he was wrong about what he did with Turkey in trying to talk about kidnapping Fethullah Gulen and taking huge amounts of money for that. But those things have nothing to do with the Russiagate story. This is the problem here. I think eventually they cannot keep this going. I really think the bottom's going to fall out eventually. But if they can get Trump on a financial crime of some sort, or obstruction of justice. The guy did go on TV and tell Lester Holt that he fired Comey because of that Russia thing. So, I mean, and there could be other evidence, too. So I would not exclude that they're going to get Trump on obstruction of justice or financial crime or people close to him. But
well,
all
Joe,
of that is moving further and further from Moscow.
Joe, we're going to have to stop it there. I really appreciate it. I'm really glad we connected on this call, because I'm sure our listeners are going to have their eyes opened by what you had to say, because they're not going to hear this any other place, unfortunately. Joe Loria, thanks for being our guest today. People can reach you at your address is Gmail. What, I have the address here somewhere.
Joe Loria at gmail.com.
LauriA.
UN Joe on Twitter. My articles appear on Consortium News. The one that we talked about is called House Russiagate Rationalizes Censorship.
Check it out, people.
I appreciate you having me on, Jeff. Appreciate you having me on.
Our pleasure. Thank you. This is Jeff Blankford, and thank you for listening.